This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Coming to the bat for the answers here.
The one show that helps you make better money moves. The program all about your money, your business, and your life.
You guys talk about a lot of really good information that even I can understand.
Call Ray now at 844-RAY-SHOW, 844-RAY-SHOW. This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Thank you very much. Thank you and welcome to the one talk show in America that helps you make better money moves. It's the Ray Lucia Show with Johnny Dean in the house. Hello there, John.
Hello, hello. We got a busy hour. We have other people walking in here. We have two groups coming through, waving at us.
Walking through. They walk right in.
Set right down.
That's
Ben. Baby, let your mind roll.
Mind roll on. That's what it was. The Wii 5.
The Wii 5 doing that?
Yep.
Walk right in. Okay.
I think it was, wasn't it?
Wii 5 did.
No. When I woke up this morning.
You were on my mind.
That was the Wii 5.
Yeah.
So who did walk right in, set right down?
Yeah, see, now you've talked for 30 seconds.
Welcome, folks. It is the Ray Lucia program. As Johnny Dean looks up the difference between Wii 5
and the
come on, John. Anyway, we do have Gino Pastula.
Hey,
coming
in
the house.
Well, Rooftop singers.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yes.
Gene Pastula will be joining us momentarily.
Hey,
I got a lot of stuff.
I know Gene. Yeah, he talks good insurance stuff and he talks. So.
Well, Gene's a very, very smart guy, but he's also a really funny guy. And he's been a friend of mine for, golly, about as long as you've been a friend of mine. That's a long time.
That's a long time.
Yeah,
we are working on almost 3 decades.
You don't normally have friends that long, John.
I don't have friends at all. I don't hang out with anybody.
Let's jump into this. Investors are buying stocks and bonds at the same time, which means something has to give. I don't like that story. Let's see. Oh, I got this in the mail. I guess it was last night. I saw it early this morning. And it's a guy by the name of John Delvecchio. He wrote me a personal letter.
He did.
He did indeed.
He said, Dear Ray.
Dear Ray. See that?
He does say that.
So this is a personal letter. Now, I know that this guy does newsletters and all that stuff, and usually I just erase them. But for some reason, I read this letter, and I said, doggone it, Mr. Delvecchio, maybe my peep, I don't know.
Who's speaking directly to you.
He's speaking directly to me. So here's what he had to say, and I'll read this to everybody, and you'll understand the point when I get to the end, and maybe before that. Here's a trivia question for you. This is his comments to me,
yes.
Right?
All right.
What did the stock market do on August 4th, 1994?
Oh, it was either
up or down, or it would have been sideways, yeah.
Yeah.
That's my wife's birthday, by the way.
Oh.
So I wasn't paying attention to the stock market. I was paying attention to her.
As you should.
Don't know? Me either, he says. Over time, what happens to stocks on a given day is meaningless. Yet financial news is reported every day as if it's a life or death situation. Here's a simple tip to vastly increase your wealth. He's going to tell me vastly increase my wealth. Stop watching the news, all of it. He's right.
Well, we've said that.
Absolutely. I realized the news was bad in 2008. When I came home from work early because I wasn't feeling well, I laid down on the sofa, clicked on CNN's headline news for some background noise. That was your first mistake.
Yeah.
The show ran in a 30-minute loop. I lost count of how many people were murdered, mugged, and or raped, the number of natural disasters underway, the amount of terror plots foiled, the politicians who'd done shady things, and all the other generally bad stuff happening in the world. It was depressing. As I watched the news that day, I thought someone should launch the Good News Channel. That's us, John.
Hey, the Good News Channel.
Yeah. Anyway, he goes on. We need a good foundation from which to work, and we need to consistently apply our method if we want unbound wealth. We must think long term. That's the only way to achieve the results we desire. Investing in financial markets has turned into a spectator sport. When I do, on rare occasions, watch the financial news, I often think it's like watching ESPN before the Super Bowl. But while the Super Bowl happens just once a year, the stock markets open almost every weekday of the year. The experts talk over each other. We know how to do that.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
We're pretty good at that.
We don't do that.
Do it all the time. You know, when I was doing national television, you're doing it long distance and there's that slight delay.
And it's horrible.
It's terrible. It is just terrible.
You can't have a conversation.
It's almost like one of those old Godzilla movies.
Where you're speaking and your mouth is saying something
exactly.
else.
Exactly. Yeah. Most of them wear fancy suits with perfect hair.
That's you and me.
And they seem to know what they're talking about. There's also theatrics. For example, there's even a guy with Bozo the Clown hair who rips heads off of stuffed bulls and bears. It's literally a carnival show.
Gee, I wonder who they're talking about.
Clearly, the financial news is hazardous to your wealth. It's hazardous to your health, too, as multiple studies have revealed. But the day-to-day fluctuations of the stock market casino need not impact our thinking. Watching the news could cause us to act at precisely the wrong time and do the exact opposite of what we should do. One day the stock market's down and the experts have an explanation for it. The very next day, that explanation is refuted and the stock market goes up. Complex theories make the person explaining them seem smart. Then we seem smart when we tell our neighbor or friends all the complicated reasons why the financial markets are doing this or that. Forget all that nonsense. It's counterproductive. Indeed, it's like a pickpocket. If you don't know the level of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, you're probably way ahead of your market-savvy neighbor. It's not relevant to building long-term wealth. In 30 years, it will be completely pointless to know what level the stock market indexes are trading at today.
In 3 years, not even 30 years.
For someone that writes newsletters, who's trying to get you to buy their newsletter, he's actually telling you the truth. Now, next week when I get his letter, it might be buy this stock or do that. I don't know. But I was just impressed, so I'm giving him some props. John Delvecchio, you are 110% correct.
Is it because somebody who's paying attention every day to the ups and the downs and all that tend to react?
That's exactly what they do. And by the way, when you listen or watch the guy that you know bites the bears and throws the chairs and all that stuff, they're compelling. I mean, their story is compelling. They're very smart people and articulate, and they talk about the markets and talk about the stocks and they interview the CEOs. And you know, for the average brain like mine, you go, that guy seems to make some sense. But I can tell you almost unequivocally. When you make moves based on something you see or hear or feel, it's going to end up bad for you. But when you make long-term moves based on a strategy, based on a plan, based on something that's got substance behind it, except some smart guy talking smart stuff, then I think it's going to drive you crazy, no less drive you to the poorhouse.
The guy that bites the heads off and throws chairs and all that stuff, wasn't he the one back in 2000 or 1999 that had said, these are the 20 stocks or something.
They were the 10.
The 10, yeah, the 10 stocks that every investor should own.
Yeah.
And of course,
every single one of them, he emphasized.
Yes. Yeah, every one of them. If I own no other stocks in my portfolio, these are the ones I would have. Something like
that. You're quoting one of my old seminars, by the way.
Well, it just popped in my head.
You've got a great memory. I wish I had your memory. Well, I didn't even remember that.
You used to have my memory, I think. Okay, what were they down?
They were down 94% or something like that. It was a ridiculous number.
Just in that 1 year.
Yeah, that's right.
That's not necessarily the fault. I mean, anybody could have guessed wrong.
Well, the problem was it was the tech craze back then.
The problem was it was.
And those technology stocks were on fire. And of course, you know, if you guess right, you sound like you're a genius. If you guess wrong, you say, no, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean go out and buy them. I just meant these are the top 10 stocks that I think look pretty attractive right now.
And if you'd watched me 2 months later, I said, no, sell them now. Sell them. They were good for 2 months.
You missed the sell signal. You would have paid me $150 a month, then I would have given you the sell signal. But since you weren't part of my membership, you don't get it.
It's such a load of garbage.
Anyway, we'll talk more about this, I'm sure, in the future. Let me tell you what else is going on here, Mr. Johnny Dean.
Yes.
Investors may have a false sense of security. Do you?
No.
No? You were just yawning. Was I boring you?
No, no. It has to do with being up since 3-something.
But me too. You should have called me. Natixis did a survey of 750 individuals in the U.S. According to David Guinta, CEO of U.S. and Canada Natixis, a decade of rising markets, low interest rates, and subdued volatility have given investors unreasonable expectations and a false sense of security. Their research, of course, suggests this. At least half of investors, they said the long-term bull market bolstered their confidence that they're on track to reach long-term goals. Here's the problem with that. They tell you one thing. Yes, I'm a long-term investor. But they do exactly the opposite. And that's what this Natixis study is articulating. They're basically saying, yes, we are long-term investors. And at the first sign of volatility, they run for the hills.
Maybe long-term to them is 3 weeks.
Yeah, diversified to me is Coke and Pepsi as you pick up your Mountain Dew.
Diet Mountain Dew.
Diet Mountain Dew. Hey, stick around, folks. We'll be back. It's the Ray Program. I wonder if Adam was recording our rehearsal the other night when I was jamming that. I think that sounded exactly like me.
Well, they learned how to play from you,
yeah,
actually.
I think they were listening.
You wrote
to me.
The song.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. Just like I wrote the Wii 5 song.
Oh, please. I wish I could write music. I really wish I could write music. I can't. I can arrange it. I can make it better, but I cannot write it.
You wrote that song. I had the apartment up front and she had the flat behind.
Yeah, well,
you
that's
did a great, great
wrote
job
the
on that.
That
one.
I thought it was good.
I wrote the lyrics to it.
You did. It was
I didn't write the words. Johnny Dean and me, Ray Lucci, are having some fun with you. You know, I was talking about this, and we'll get to some really important stuff, too, and this is important. Here's what they were talking about in this Natixis survey. They said the survey also finds that investors may have unrealistic expectations for returns. Check this out. The annual returns, in parentheses, above inflation, end paren. This is amazing to me, that investors say they need to achieve or reach their goals is 9.8%. That's above inflation compared to 8.9% last year.
Wow, really?
43% higher than what financial advisors think is realistic, which is also unrealistic. 6.3% above inflation is what financial advisors believe they will need to meet their goal. They're not going to meet any of their clients' goals. You can't get.
How do you do that?
6.3%
above inflation. That's almost 10%.
Well, first off, they're going to say, well, markets do 10%, but they're ignoring the sequence of returns
of
risk
course.
That's going to take that down to about 4.5%. So it's just unrealistic expectations. All right, moving right along. I wanted to bring this up because Gene Pastula will be
Who?
Here. You know Gene. Remember the guy?
Man. Yeah.
Yeah, you know the guy.
Yeah, I think he may have been on my show a couple times.
You ever have scotch with him?
I
don't.
No. I don't have scotch with anybody.
He puts it in his coffee and didn't tell anybody.
And then he drops it in your coffee?
No, then he comes
you?
On the show.
Well, that's why. All right.
We'll get the GM. I'm teasing, obviously. I read this morning. Sarah O'Brien wrote it. Remarried after having kids. Here are some tips to avoid accidentally disinheriting them.
Oh, it can happen.
I've had several experiences over my lengthy career with respect to this because, as we know, so many out of 100 get divorced. Interestingly enough, the divorce rate for 55 and older is increasing, whereas the younger set, the divorce rate is actually decreasing a bit.
Per capita?
I
know the younger set aren't even getting married.
Well, that's
so
true.
So that may be why.
Yeah, 42% of those ages 18 to 34 in 2013 were getting divorced, and 60% of those 35 to 54. And then 57% of those age 55 and older.
Wow.
So divorce, I mean, it's not good. Financially, it's not good. But then when you start thinking about some of the other aspects, and she goes on to talk about some of those other aspects, One is this whole idea of beneficiary designations.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, usually the first of the year, we always talk about it's time for you to look at all your life insurance policies and the beneficiaries on your IRAs and all that stuff. Because if you've gone through a divorce, remember, whomever you name as the beneficiary on an account gets the money, whether it's an ex-spouse or not. You may have a will, or you may have some document that says, well, so-and-so, my kids get this money. But you have a life insurance policy, and Pastula will tell you this, by the way. Whoever is named as the beneficiary in the life insurance policy is getting the money. So if you still have your ex-spouse as the beneficiary of the life insurance policies, and many times in the divorce decree it requires insurance and all that, but whoever's name is on the beneficiary designation is gonna get the money, with one exception. And you know what that is, don't you?
If it's on the beneficiary, where the beneficiary does not get the life insurance?
Where the beneficiary does not get the assets, not necessarily life insurance. It could be assets in a retirement plan.
Yeah.
So not an IRA. There's a difference. If you have a 401k plan and you name your children as the beneficiary of the 401k, everything's fine if you croak. Children are going to get the money. You get remarried. Your children are still named beneficiaries on your 401k plan. You get remarried, and under federal law, it is the spouse that gets the money.
Even if you've named the beneficiary.
Even if you've named them, because it's a federal law that supersedes. Now, yeah. It's likely that HR will catch that and say, oh, by the way, you need some kind of a post-nuptial or a signature.
They need to sign off on it.
That's right. The new spouse needs to sign off on it. Now, solutions, because that's what this program is all about. You're going to have this discussion. And I recall vividly having had this discussion many times in my past, in my career. The way you solve this problem is with a life insurance policy. Yes, and Gene will talk more about this, but the way you solve it is with a life insurance policy, because you make sure that if you're in a community property state, you take your community property funds, which incidentally, the day you get married, even if your spouse makes nothing. I have this conversation with one of my band members all the time. Even if your spouse makes nothing and you make all the money and it's coming from retirement plans or it's coming from your sole and separate property, it doesn't matter. Well, sole and separate property, that could be arguable. But if it's coming from community property assets, it is community property. Your job and the income that you get from your job is a community property asset. And so therefore, you need to make sure that if you're buying a life insurance policy, you want to name your kids as the beneficiary of the life insurance policy, and then your spouse would be the beneficiary of the 401k plan, whether you name him or her as the beneficiary or not, and whether he or she contributes to the insurance policy or not. So these are discussions you need to have before you get married and even after you get married. But it's a pretty good idea to say, well, I got $500,000 in my 401k plan. My kids are the beneficiary. You know what? We're going to buy a $500,000 life insurance policy and name the children as beneficiaries. So if I die in the middle of the night, which has happened, I had a friend where this happened to them. If I die in the middle of the night, you're going to get the $500,000 because you're my new sweetheart. You're my wife, or you're my husband, because that
can
be either way.
You're my spouse.
You're my spouse.
Yes.
Very good. And the kids are going to get $500,000. That way your kids are not fighting with your spouse.
Because they could ultimately inherit the 401k from the spouse, but your spouse is almost the same age as the kids.
Well, in many cases, that's true. But you don't want to create World War III, because usually your second spouse also have kids
of their own.
Their own.
And they could cut out your kids.
And your kids get disinherited. And let me talk to the men for just a minute. This is not sexist. You're going to die. And you're going to die before your wife. and this becomes exceptionally important that you have life insurance. How do you get it? Stick around. Pastoula's coming up next. Well, an appropriate song for the Bulldog. Hey, Bulldog, Gene Pastoula in the house. Hey, Gene, good to see you, man.
Nice to see you.
You know, I was talking to Johnny Dean. I'm sure you must have heard us in the green room. Well, you were actually standing in the hallway because we don't have a green room anymore.
The green hallway.
The luxurious studios yes, here at the Ray Lucia Show. And I was talking about how life insurance can be used to help make sure you don't disinherit your children. You had some thoughts about that.
Well, actually, you know, one of the best uses of life insurance is when you want to have a specific thing happen. In other words, you want to, there's a financial reason for making sure that money is transferred at the time of your death beyond any shadow of a doubt. And life insurance can do that. So when you're talking about the idea of having to deal with the ramifications of a divorce and a remarriage and a 401k and all the rest, also business transfers when you have a death of a partner or what have you. You want to make sure that the person that you would like to have the value of your asset gets it without hassle and all the rest. So the life insurance policy does allow for that. You can specifically set up and you know exactly how much money that is going to go to them. You know how much you're going to have to invest in that vehicle. Actually, you can actually count the rate of return or calculate the rate of return if you know when you're going to die. But
being
that rate
I'm
of return,
Sicilian, I can probably predict that. But you brought up...
some circumstances. Yes.
You brought up partnerships. Mm-hmm. I guess when you're getting remarried, I wouldn't know because I've never been remarried. I've been... Well, we celebrated our 20th. We went back and had the ceremony all over again. That's not a remarriage. That's just a confirmation.
She made you do that. You had to commit to
that. Yeah, that's a long story that I'll tell some other time because it was not a good day. It was not. We almost didn't stay married.
My wife's never brought that up to me. I'm very glad. I don't know why. Yeah. It just, you know, once is enough.
But it is kind of a partnership. When you have kids involved, and typically in a remarriage situation, there's kids involved on both sides. And it's only human nature that if your spouse dies and you have kids from your prior marriage, you're going to want to take care of those kids. So if you're on the other side of that 401k plan and you're getting the money, it takes a certain kind of individual to say, you know what, I'm going to give it to his or her kids instead of my kids if I die. Yeah. Most likely they're going to spend the money. But you brought up business partnerships, and I hadn't talked about that in quite a long while. The whole concept of a buy and sell agreement. Many partnerships are started, and I dare say some pretty big ones and very successful ones, and they've done no documentation on what happens if.
Yes. And in fact, that's one of the what we call the advanced underwriting areas of life insurance that can get very, you know, can get complicated. But it's one that, you know, the business people, you know, the two partners are concentrating on building the business, financing it, their products, their services, or what have you. And that is something that, you know, people don't even, I mean, people don't like to and resist thinking about the fact that they're going to die or that might happen a little bit sooner than expected. So, yeah, when that happens and you don't have documentation of what happens and who, you know, who gets the partnership share and how that is going to be transferred, you know, it gets really, really messy. So having what we call a buy and sell agreement that indicates, you know, who's going to receive and purchase the deceased's interest in the business, and agreeing that the survivor is in fact going to sell under a certain agreement, and then establishing some way of developing a price. Once that's all occurred, now a life insurance policy can be put in place that specifically says that X amount of money that you've determined is the value is going to be delivered to the survivor in exchange for the stock or interest in
shares or interest. Yeah, yeah. That's important, yeah. Because in a partnership, you're in business with the surviving spouse,
mm-hmm.
right? And mm-hmm. so you've got to figure out a way, unless you think the surviving spouse could step into the husband's or wife's role.
Well, and you can certainly think about that during the time, you know, prior to, with pre-planning, you know, that, hey, as a matter of fact, you know, if I die, I want my spouse to take over my role here. And she is very capable of doing that. And my partner says, yeah, that's fine. I'll, and vice versa. Or maybe that in that situation, the spouse is fine. But the other partner says, but, you know, I just want my wife to have the money.
Yeah, or if I'm your partner, I may say, you know, I know Joanne, she's brilliant, but I just don't want to be in business with your wife.
That's right.
I would rather give her a check. And not have to have that obligation, because if something happens to the business or if the business goes down or whatever, I don't want to be blaming her and she doesn't want to be blaming me.
I wonder how many partnerships have broken up arguing over that. They say, screw it, we're going to get out of business.
Well, I'm sure there are many. Also, we should bring up the fact that disability is yet another reason where businesses can go down the tubes. Because if you and I are in business and something happens to me, I'm so valuable to you that you might, feel really, really bad that you can't pay me anymore. But I'll guarantee you one thing, my wife's going to be knocking at your door saying, hey, you know what? You guys had a nice, successful business going here. Can't you just keep paying him the way you were paying him?
Yeah.
And you say, if only we were bringing in the same amount
of
business.
Well, in fact, as you know, that I've spoken about this many times on this show, is that that now a lot of life insurance policies have ways of starting to pay those benefits, even though you haven't passed away, but you're experiencing, you know, huge medical costs and care, you know, care costs and what have you. You can tap those death benefits for long-term care or convalescent care. So get a double benefit out of this thing by setting it up. And quite frankly, people look at it as having to buy the insurance, which means that, you know, essentially that you pay money, and if something happens, you get paid. Well, in the case of a life insurance policy under this situation, somebody will always get paid, whether whenever you die or if you need care and all the rest of the stuff. So now you can look at this thing as not so much as a purchase of something that you may not use, but basically an investment in a financial instrument that will deliver X amount of dollars in the future, tax-free. And when you calculate, the only thing you don't know is when it's going to happen. You know how much you're going to put in, you know how much you're going to get out or is going to come out. Now you look down the road and say, you know, okay, I put in X, I get Y, and I die in 15 years or 18 years or whatever. You look at the rate of return that you've done on that thing, and it is impressive.
The only time the rate of return doesn't look fabulous and fantastic is if you die way after you're supposed to, and then you win anyway, right?
That's right. Yeah. When you get to be 95 or 97 and the rate of return is only at 2.4% per year, you know, gee, that's really sad.
You should throw a party. I've looked at these second-to-die policies, and the rates of return are unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, really, because when you factor in the tax-free death benefit, it's tantamount to a 7, 8, 9, 10% rate of return, gross.
And the other side of that, too, is that the people that typically are looking at these kinds of situations, the money that they invest in the life insurance policy doesn't make a difference in their monthly, yearly, or lifetime quality of life, standard of living, or anything else. It's just simply one of the investments, and I know that using that word in conjunction with financial planning and insurance, it's not technically an investment, but when you put some money in and you get a bunch of money out, and there is a rate of return.
Call it whatever you want. Exactly. It's still a pretty darn good deal.
Exactly. And so they, if they can get their head around the fact that they're investing money into a financial instrument with a huge institution, and then at some point in time, that money is going to come out for the benefit of somebody they care about, that's a good deal.
Gene Pastula, if you want an analysis or if you'd like to just have them take a look at yours, whether it's a business or a family situation, a second marriage or whatever, have Gene take a look at it. He's got a tremendous staff, Tim Morton, all kinds of people.
They can call me. Yeah. I have an 800 number.
Well, you should give it out because you got 10 seconds.
238-8144. 238-8144. That's an 800 number.
An 800 number, 238-8144. Yeah. Gene Pastula. Yep. Thank you, Gino. It's great seeing you again, buddy.
Nice to see you.
We'll be back. Don't go away. It's the Ray Lucia Show. Welcome back, folks. This is the Ray Lucia Show. Thank you, Gene Pastula, my friend, for many, 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 many years. You know, he helped write a chapter in my very first book.
Gene did,
yes.
Oh.
Yeah, because back then, you might recall this.
Yeah.
But that's back when he was one of the original creators of the so-called linked benefits life insurance policy that used the death benefit for long-term care. It's a brilliant idea. It was his. And he brought it to, I'm trying to remember the company, it might have been First Penn Pacific or one of them. And I was so impressed. Of course, he was a local guy that I had known and known of. We became friends. And I said, well, I'm writing this book. Would you mind, you know, helping me write the chapter? Because he knew way more about the product that was a brand new product at the time.
On life insurance.
It was a linked benefit life insurance policy.
Yeah, where you can take the death benefit before you die and use it for yourself for long-term care.
That's right. And of course, now, as he just mentioned, there are all kinds of companies that are using even traditional, even term policies, where they allow you to accelerate mm-hmm. the death benefit for chronic illness,
disability, or whatever it is, even annuities.
I think the annuities have those provisions too. So I think it would make a lot of sense for people to talk to their planner, advisor, insurance agent, or get a hold of Gene, or send me an email at raylucia.com, and I can put you in touch with him or one of his staff people that do that.
Yeah, the nice thing about it is that what I like is I'm not handing my money over to an insurance company. I'll never see it again. If I don't use it for long-term care, which happens, you know, there's a percentage of maybe half, I don't know what the percentage is, that don't use it for long-term care, when I'm gone, it turns into a death benefit.
And I think there's still a few of those companies that have a money-back guarantee type thing where they say if you don't like us after X number of years, you can get all your money back. You put $100,000 in, we'll make sure you get $100,000 out. In the meantime, you're covered for $300,000 if something happens
to
you.
Yeah, I think it's only about 3 years, something like that, three or four, where you have to leave it in there. You can mm-hmm. access some of it, but by the time it takes two or three, 4 years.
You can access like 90% of it,
right.
But if you want 100% of it, you got to wait 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
It's really a decent deal. A lot of the banks use these in lieu of their, you know, they have people that are sitting on cash that have done nothing with the cash, and it earns 0.0. Uh-huh. So you could just transfer it from one pocket to the next and get a reasonable rate of return, and they take the interest, tax-free, by the way, to pay for the long-term care and the death benefits and all that. And you can't, you know.
Well, I think about it. I got $50,000 sitting in a CD somewhere. I say, well, I'll use that for long-term care. I don't need long-term care insurance. I'll use that. And if I die, my heirs can have the $50,000. Okay, that's all well and good. But I go in and I need a long-term care, $50,000. What if I need $150,000 worth of long-term care? Because I'm in there for 3 years.
You'll probably, for a man, it's usually a little bit less than 2 years on average. But you're not an average guy.
That could be $75,000. You don't know if you want to.
It could be way more than that, depending on what happens.
Right. So
I know I'm spending right now. My family is spending over $8,000 a month on my dad. And he ain't going anywhere anytime soon. It's already been over a year.
Yeah, so there you go. That's almost $100,000 a year.
Yep.
And so, but if nothing happens and I don't go into the nursing home, but I just die, my family doesn't get 50 grand, they get, you know, 90 grand or some number higher than that, guaranteed tax free.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't I do that?
So how much time do we have since we killed the email segment?
Do we have any time? We have like 4 minutes.
Okay, hit it, boys. Let's see if we can get an email done.
Sorry about that. You know. All right, let's see. I'll find a short one here. Gus wants to know, I was given a house which I put on the market and sold within 3 months. Will I be taxed on the difference between what the buyer paid plus improvements in the sale price?
Okay, so, you know, technically speaking, all right, the house was sold, that he inherited, did I miss that?
He said I was given.
He was given a house. I'm told it was gifted.
So I don't think it was inherited.
It wasn't inherited. So if you were gifted a house, remember there's this thing called carryover basis. So if you receive a house as a gift, then whatever the basis is that the donee had, what did they pay for it, plus improvements and all that stuff, less depreciation if it was a rental property, that's your basis. You carry over the basis from what the donor, I guess it was, not the donee, yes, or the donee, but the donor ended up giving you. So if then the house appreciated from the time that they gave it to you, it doesn't matter because your basis hasn't changed unless you added value to the particular house by putting improvements in yourself. So your improvements would increase the basis, and then the difference between the adjusted basis and the net sales price, net meaning after you paid
expenses,
the commissions
and
so forth, is what you pay capital gains tax on. The tax rate could be any one of three or four different rates. It could be as low as 0% or as high as like 21%.
Well, let me ask you a question here. This Gus was given a house. He inherited it, didn't inherit it. He was given it to, it was given to him. He had it for less than 3 months or 3 months, less than a year. Is it even, he carries over the basis, he carries over all that stuff. Does he carry over the length of time? Is this going to be short-term capital gains for Gus?
No, the only way it might be short-term would be if there might be a gain in the 3 months that he had it. But I don't think that, certainly the gain from the carryover basis would not be short-term.
So if the buyer paid 100 grand, it's now worth 500. I'm just making it up. It was given to me at you know, $100,000. I'm just wondering out loud. I would need somebody to maybe take a look at this.
Well,
I don't know
it would be, I'm fairly certain it would be long-term capital gains on the part that's inherited. Yeah. Where I'm fuzzy, again, we're not CPAs on this show. We can call one of my CPA brain trust people during one of the breaks.
We could very well do that. I don't know.
But there might be a short gain.
This is the difference between being gifted something and inheriting. I know I got less than a minute, but you know, there are parents who want to get assets out of their name, whatever. They often say, well, I'll just gift my home to my son or daughter.
If you're 91 years old, that's usually a bad idea.
It's usually a bad idea because now, I mean, I've owned this home for 50 years.
Yeah, you get a step up in basis upon death. You don't upon gift.
No.
But the basis carries over, and then if you sell, you're going to have to pay a capital gains tax.
You are, and it's better to inherit, in most cases, capital assets than have them gifted to you, I would say.
Well, no, it's always better to inherit, but somebody has to die in order for that to happen.
Well, that is true, but if they were going to get it anyway, you hold on to it, I'll wait.
Mom, Dad, could you speed it up a little bit?
Have
Mom
bacon.
And Dad could borrow the money, make a cash gift to you, and then get it paid off with the sale after they're dead.
Hey, we're out of time.
I am out of time. Hey, have a blessed day, folks. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Ray Lucia Show, bringing you the best in money information, answering questions about your biggest financial challenges, talking about your money, your business, and your life. Ray Lucia is not a registered representative of or affiliated with any securities brokerage or investment advisory firm. The views and opinions expressed by Ray and his guests are not necessarily those of this station or its sponsors and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investment advice. You should always consult with the appropriate advisors before making any financial decisions. Ray is available to take your questions online at raylucia.com.